And that is based on the zeitgeist or the psychic space of man at any moment. And wars affect the psychic space. When Hitler killed all those Jews, as horrible as that act lives in the world of form in man forever, still the service that that whole horror served was that unified man in an experience of the horror of it. And that, in a way, brought him to a higher level of consciousness. And you don't pit giving up of a human life to any of that. I'm merely pointing out that history is the story. It's his story of evolving consciousness. That's what history is. It's always his story. It's not your story, it's his story. And you're living your own story, and your story will live as fast as you become conscious. And when you become, you can look around and see that the universe is being kept at the plane it is and isn't going up in smoke at the moment. Because when you get on the bus now and then, there's a bus driver who's so high and beautiful that everybody that gets on his bus feels better when they get off the bus than when they get on the bus. And he's just driving the bus. He just happens to be Buddha driving a bus. He's not going around saying, I'm appearing in town hall, I'm Buddha. See, he's just being Buddha. He's just doing what Buddha does. And you begin to realize that the earth is full of very high beings who are constantly spreading this other force, you know, creating this other kind of consciousness. And you begin, there's a great set of comic books called the Doctor Strange comics, which Doctor Strange meets the mystic mind is one of the great ones. And the mystic mind has created a mind net, and he's not going to let anybody through. And Doctor Strange has got to get through to save the mystic mind because he's caught in this net. So Doctor Strange sends images of himself, see? And you see Doctor Strange images going into the mystic mind. The mystic mind puts up huge nets and pushes them all back, see? And you see their minds manifest in all of these ways. See, it's three-dimensional. Yeah. It's all comic books, of course. And then you begin to see what it means to create psychic spaces. See? Now, I do talk on, I know. It's funny, one question, I go on and on. Just seems to cover, all right, I won't tell that story. I'll answer questions. Yes.
Here a question is asked regarding LSD and the mystical experience. Isn't it possible that drugs could become a religion?
Well, not only could they be, but they already have been. They are. In fact, they are a religion. Go ahead, yes?
I mean, isn't it possible that through chemical means you could attain all the...
I suspect people have been doing it for thousands of years also, but they haven't been talking about it. It's quite clear now that there are what are called secret initiation rites, like the Eleusinian mysteries and so on, secret initiation rites in many religions that have probably used or have turned out to use things like various psychedelic herbs, psychotropic herbs and so on, as part of the rites connected with it. And it's entirely possible. It's, as far as I'm concerned, psychedelics is but another yoga. And the fact is that at this moment, we in the West don't know enough about this particular yoga, either chemically or in terms of all possible side effects and implications, or in terms of what is the optimum method to use to make it work, so that those of us that are working on consciousness are looking to as many other methods as are available to learn what we can learn from them, with the idea that there is this interchange. In other words, it is very conceivable that some combination of yoga and psychedelics, traditional Indian yoga and psychedelics, will, or, for example, the Good Friday study that Walter Pankey did, that we did at Harvard in Boston University Chapel. We ran 20 theological students in a double-blind placebo study on Good Friday in the chapel. And the 10 that took the psilocybin, 9 of them had a religious mystical experience. Now, they had it with psilocybin, but it's in a church in a regular religious setting. So we're learning something about what the rituals of the religion are necessary for it to be a religion that brings man into the spirit, which is what religion was supposed to be about in the first place. Right? So it's entirely possible it can be. And it behooves us to have a very, very open mind about all of this at all times. And all I see is we're exchanging information.
The state of mind now that you had with LSD temporarily before?
Do I feel I've achieved the state of mind I had before with LSD? I have, through when I am doing very formal sadhana, meaning spiritual work in myself, and part of the sadhana I do, which is part of Ashtanga Yoga, the yoga I pursue, involves pranayama, which is control of breath, control of prana through breathing techniques. Under these conditions, I have gone into states that are comparable to almost all of the states I've experienced with LSD. Not all of them, but almost all of them. And I see that that is a method very similar in certain ways, in that it forces, it overrides certain habits of thought and places I'm not in order to put me in that place, and then I come back from it. It's a discontinuous place again for me. But it functions very much like psychedelics, and you can get hooked on pranayama in the same way as you can get hooked on the experience of LSD. And all of them are experiences, and you finally have to give up being the experiencer to be it, and then you're beyond the psychedelic or beyond the hatha yoga or the pranayama.
Being an experimenter, researcher by experience background, can you still be without corrupting the purity of the experience that those who don't have such a background can achieve? Practicing the same call or searching for the same level of consciousness?
How much can one remain an experimenter? Is that what you're asking? And
remaining the experimenter.
Yes.
Can you achieve genuinely?
Right. No, I think not. I think that there is a part of the process that involves giving up any specific predisposition you have. There is an act of surrender. Now, it turns out that when you give it up, you don't lose it like you thought you were going to do when you gave it up. But you do have to give it up. That is, for I consider myself data, really. I consider myself a subject in the world of Western science, because my own consciousness is the stuff, and I can only be studied within the subject-object world of the experimenter as by someone independent of me, since it's happening to me. At the same moment, I was trained as an experimental social scientist, and therefore I still apply. What I'm doing now is really a behavioristic study of my own behavior change, of my own change. In other words, there is social science anyway, this may not be exactly the question you're asking, but I'm sort of working around it a little bit. We got so frightened of Titchnerian introspectionism in the way we got into behaviorism, that we got fiercely into behaviorism, and we ruled out the possibility that a person could be the observer of his own behavior without having the subjective fallacy as the experimenter. There are ways of training yourself to do this once you stop being too afraid to do it, and it is a body of knowledge that becomes available that way. It is not, doesn't have the criteria of public data, but it still fulfills certain criteria, and as such is a body of knowledge. It's not formally within the scientific system. There are parts of this where the model of being an experimenter stands in your way. There's no doubt about that. It corrupts it. You have to give up being the experimenter to have the experience. The experience of the transcendence of experimenter-ness. And this is one of the problems, that you can only know you know after you've been it, and in order to be it, you've got to give up knowing you know. It's a fantastic paradox in the dance. Yes?
How do you reconcile faith and reason?
How do you reconcile faith and reason? Well, as I feel it now, we have come out of a period where in man's evolutionary journey, in the evolutionary journey of us as beings, man evolves, which has these great frontal lobes and this capacity for rational thought or for self-consciousness. And this is, in the Hindu system, what would be called a siddhi or a power. And that power can be used a variety of ways. It can be used in the service of what I call the third chakra, that is, in terms of man's control over his environment, which is the way we've been doing it, which is the rational mind controls. It's man over nature in the anthropological Florence Cluckhone differentiations. She talks about man over societies, that a man over nature, societies that have man in nature and societies that have man under nature. And we've attachment to the siddhi of the rational mind puts man in the group of man over nature.